As important as choosing the right destination when traveling is choosing the right travel partner.
Gene!
Eugene Fodor!
Gene, was good.
But be careful, because the worst trips result when two partners have two different agendas.
The CIA really need your help, Gene.
Freeze, Americano! Huh? Oh!
Gene, run!
Listen to Fodor's Guide to Espionage on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Something that makes me crazy is when people say, well, I had this career before, but it was a waste. And that's where the perspective shift comes, that it's not a waste, that everything you've done has built you to where you are now. This is She Pivots, the podcast where we explore the inspiring pivots women have made and dig deeper into the personal reasons behind them. Join me, Emily Tisch Sussman, every Wednesday on She Pivots. Listen to She Pivots on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Saleha Mohsen, and I've covered economic policy for years and reported on how it impacts people across the United States. In 2016, I saw how voters were leaning towards Trump and how so many Americans felt misunderstood by Washington. So I started The Big Take DC. We dig into how money, politics, and power shape government and the consequences for voters. With new episodes every Thursday, you can listen to The Big Take DC on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
The Big Take from Bloomberg News brings you what's shaping the world's economies with the smartest and best-informed business reporters around the world.
We cover the stories behind what's moving money and markets
and help you understand what's happening, what it means, and why it matters every afternoon. I'm Sarah Holder.
I'm Saleha Mohsen.
And I'm David Gura. Listen to The Big Take on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome to Stuff from the Science Lab from HowStuffWorks.com.
Hey guys, welcome to the podcast. This is Allison Lattermilk, the science editor at HowStuffWorks.com.
And this is Robert Lamb, science writer at HowStuffWorks.com. So Allison, have you seen the movie Phantasm?
I've not seen it. It's a 1970s flick, right?
Yeah, horror flick. You haven't seen it.
I have not, but you have mentioned it before.
All right. Well, okay. It's awesome. It's, it's horrible, but it's awesome. It's, the basic plot line here is, you have, a mortuary where some funny things are happening. There are silver balls flying around, stabbing people in the head. And there are these dwarves running around in these little, little yellow robes. Okay.
Okay.
Like evil dwarves.
Okay.
Right. And, you come to find out that all of this basically has to do with gravity. There's a really tall man, like a scary old man that's really tall, okay? And it turns out he's from another planet.
Okay.
Where the gravity is more intense, like a larger world, okay? So that's why he's taller when he comes to this world.
I see.
And the deal with the dwarves, he's taking corpses and smooshing them down, making them more compact, and bringing them back to life as zombies, and then sending them to this other world to be like slaves, all right?
Uh-huh.
So dwarves are being used as zombies. Dwarves are being used as slave labor on another world where there's more gravity.
And this all occurs thanks to gravity.
Yes, for me anyway, as a kid, you know, it's like, you know, gravity's there, great, but I never think about it. But then somebody comes along and shows me how gravities affect, zombie dwarves and it really, you know, underlined.
That resonated with you?
Yeah, it really resonated with me and underlined how amazing gravity is. I mean, like I said, we take it for granted because it's everywhere, because pretty much every physical act on the planet involves gravity in some way or another.
Sure. Yes.
So that's what we're going to talk about today. We're going to basically talk about four examples of technologies that utilize gravity in a way that highlight just how amazing it is. But of course, to do that, we need to talk briefly about gravity itself. Now, we have an excellent article on HowStuffWorks.com about this. I recommend checking that out if you want more details. But basically, two schools of thought. There's Newton. Newton's a theory of universal gravitation from back in the 1680s. And this is the idea that gravity is a predictable force that acts on all matter in the universe, and it's a function of both mass and distance.
Okay.
All right? basically each particle of matter attracts every other particle of matter. All right. Whether we're talking about a grape or a massive sun, okay? Whether we're talking about a spaceship or, I don't know, a dog, everything has gravity, all right? And if the only two things you had in the universe were a dog and a spaceship, they would each have a great gravitational pull, and they would be drawn to each other.
Okay.
Okay. Go ahead.
And then along comes Einstein.
Yes, along comes Einstein, and he says phooey to this whole dog and spaceship business. And he says that gravity isn't even a force, all right? He's seeing it more as a distortion in the shape of space-time, all right? As the distortion in the fourth dimension. And in Einstein's footsteps, you have some more modern theories as well, okay, that are less, even less proven. There's the idea that that gravity is due to little particles called gravitons that cause objects to be attracted to one another. And there's another theory that there's gravitational radiation, which is supposedly the idea is that gravitational radiation is generated when an object is accelerated by an external force. Basically, the idea here is that gravity is awesome and every day. It's mysterious. Basically, the idea here is that as every day as gravity is,
there's a lot we don't know about
it. There's a lot we don't know about it. It's still kind of a mystery in many ways.
All right, so with that, let's kick it off with four cool things that gravity can do for you.
Yeah, what do you got? What can gravity do for you?
Well, if you listen to our Fighting Asteroids podcast, we touched on this briefly, but gravity can actually could save the Earth from being destroyed by some crazy space rock.
And always good.
Yeah, I like this. So this thing is called a gravity tractor, and I'm not talking about the Grateful Dead cover band that seems to be located in upstate New York of the same name. No, this gravity tractor actually might have a chance of being built, according to the BBC. There's this British company by the name of EADS Astrium that they finally started taking concrete steps to make the grav tractor a reality. So what's the grav tractor going to do? Well, it's a robotic spacecraft weighing roughly 10 tons or so. And it has a particularly daunting task once it's launched into space. It has to get within 48 meters, so roughly 150 feet, of the space rock in question. And once it gets within that range, it has to pull the rock toward it. And the two of them march happily off on a path that's not going to coincide with the Earth.
And now, in theory, though, it could also... if you had a New York area jam band floating in space, it could also use its immense gravity to pull them aside as well, right?
Right, and I think if you pull the string cheese incident on there, I mean, it could just do crazy wonders with space rocks headed our way. And the other tricky thing about the tractor is it's going to have to launch. The other tricky thing about the tractor is that it has to be launched 15 years ahead of time. So we're kind of stuck. This is what we're relying on right now. So gravity, it can. It can save you from a space rock someday, perhaps. What else can it do out in space?
Well, gravity can also help you fire a spaceship to some distant corner of the solar system.
I like the way that sounds.
Yeah. This is something we call gravity assist. Sometimes you see it referred to as a gravity slingshot, but that's a little misleading. So just think of it as gravity assist.
I will.
All right. And to understand this, you need to think of the solar system in terms of the sun's gravity well, okay? Imagine a bathtub, all right? It's filled with water, and it has a little boat in it, okay? You pull the drain.
Okay.
The water begins to leave the bathtub in the form of a whirlpool. The little boat is going to be pulled towards the whirlpool.
Yes.
All right. In this scenario, the sun is the whirlpool. It's the object of the most mass, and it has the most gravitational pull.
And the toy boat is the spacecraft.
Right. And it's going to if the little toy boat is moving towards the whirlpool, it's going to go faster. To move away from the whirlpool, it has to work harder, and it's going slower, okay? That's basically the gravity well. So if we want to send something farther out into the gravity well, out to one of the outer planets,
okay,
we need a little help, all right? And it's more effective if we don't have to depend on, say, you know, thrusters and rockets to do all of the work.
Yeah, why not take advantage of an inherent force?
Right. So that's where the gravity assist comes in. And this is a flyby technique where we can add or subtract momentum to increase or decrease the energy of a spacecraft's orbit.
So we've used it?
Yes. Take, for example, Voyager 2, which launched in 1977. We flew it by Jupiter. Well, first, just, you know, to see Jupiter. That was one of its mission objectives. But also, by flying by Jupiter, this provided a trajectory boost to shoot it towards Saturn. Now, again, going back to the spaceship and the dog. You know, both the spaceship and the dog have mass and therefore have their own gravitational pull.
Okay.
All right? So Voyager 2 has its own gravitational pull, as does Jupiter. All right? So when the spacecraft actually tugs on Jupiter as it goes past, all right, and actually decreases the planet's orbital momentum by a tiny amount.
That's pretty cool.
Tiny amount. In return, the spacecraft acquires momentum from Jupiter, except as we're talking a significant amount of momentum, and it shoots it off in this new trajectory. Okay, one of the more useful analogies that you find for this is, imagine a kid standing next to a train track. Okay, and he has a softball in his hand.
Okay,
the softball is a spacecraft. All right, and then hurtling down the train track is a locomotive. All right, the locomotive is Jupiter. If you were to throw the softball and hit the front of the coming train, then the softball would veer off into another direction with the momentum of the train.
See? I see what you're getting at.
So it's very useful for shooting off any number of probes into the surrounding solar system. And a lot of people have even considered possibilities of using it for the future use of manned spacecraft, being able to like use the sun's gravity to shoot an aircraft off to the sun's gravitational pull to shoot a spaceship off towards another system. If you've seen Star Trek or any number of science fiction properties, then you've heard examples of this.
So I'd say that's a cool thing, gravity, yeah, shooting you to a distant corner of the galaxy. On a more earthly level, gravity can perhaps light your home someday.
Uh-huh.
And this is an idea that's been around for quite a while. Back in the 1970s, there were a bunch of fellows at the Lawrence Livermore Lab who thought we should try to harness the energy potential of gravity, courtesy of a black hole. So this is what they had in mind. You guys remember that a black hole forms when this big old star is dying and it's collapsing inward, and the end result is this tiny object that's just unspeakably dense. So the gravitational force of a black hole is large, so large that not even light can escape it. I know you guys know this, but let's just reiterate it. So the idea was, according to these scientists, was, well, let's locate a black hole. We'll get it to orbit the Earth.
That's the point, I think, where you cancel this plan. Like, that just sounds like the worst idea ever.
Hey, let me just...
It gets better. Okay.
Okay. So you're going to get the said black hole to orbit the Earth with the help of a spaceship.
Okay.
And once it's in permanent orbit, just, you know, kind of hanging out like black hole does, you're going to tap the power of said black hole by firing matter into it.
Okay. So the whole plan is, we're going to go and find the most destructive force in the universe. We're going to bring it home.
Bring it closer to Earth, yes.
And then we're going to feed it.
Yes, yes. And then, wait, it gets better. So you know that things get really tiny as they're, you know, hurtling toward their death spiral toward a black hole.
Mm-hmm.
Well, all that getting tiny business generates an immense amount of energy, and they thought that this amount of energy could, in fact, be enough to start a fusion reaction. So this idea of a black hole gravity thing actually never came to fruition. I think probably the first point of business was moving the black hole, or actually maybe even locating the black hole and then moving the black hole. So a couple of holes in this plan.
Yes, I would say so.
The latest incarnation of gravity power is a lamp. It's a little bit simpler.
And this is powered by a black hole.
No. Let me explain. It's conceived of by this grad student at Virginia Tech, and I think he entered his invention in some sort of 2008 Green Tech Award. And it's a guy by the name of Clay Moulton. Well, Clay calls his lamp the Gravia. So conceptually, here's how Clay's gravity-powered lamp works. If you picture kind of a cylinder-shaped floor lamp, maybe about 5 feet tall, now imagine that there are these like 5 10-pound brass weights sitting near the top. And for those of you guys who don't know what one is, there's a ball screw in the floor lamp. And What is a ball screw? I had no idea before I started doing this podcast. Well, it's a linear screw and, something rotates downward on it. So it's kind of like falling on the ball screw. It's moving downward on the ball screw. And as these brass weights move downward on the ball screw, the screw rotates and the, that rotational motion, is able to spin a generator and convert the motion into electricity. So if you can't quite picture it, you can always check out the illustration. We have a good one on our, How Gravity Powered Lamps Work article. So anyway, this electricity powers 10 LED bulbs, which light up and voila, you have light. And you think, well, how long is that going to take? Because gravity can happen relatively fast, right? Mm-hmm. You know, these falling objects might be down to the bottom of the lamp. Well, actually, it takes 4 hours. So that would be a good amount of light.
Well, it would work faster on the Phantasm planet with the dwarves on it. So.
Sure would, Robert. Sure would.
It's also worth noting here that the hourglass is actually a gravity-powered time-telling device.
Yeah, and it seems like a little mm-hmm. bit of a simpler concept than mm-hmm. the gravity-powered lamp.
Also, cuckoo clocks, but are also worth considering, though they're actually powered by black holes.
So anyway, the thing with poor Clay's lamp is that the LED technology isn't quite where it needs to be, and the LEDs aren't as efficient as they need to be, and so that means the weights would have to be much heavier, and that's about where we are with the gravity-powered lamp. So you cannot buy one at your local lamp store.
It sounds promising, though.
Yes.
I like the idea of gravity-powered electronics. Well, I'll tell you another thing that gravity can do for us.
What?
Gravity can help us understand what's going on underneath the Earth's surface.
And how might it do that?
Well, think of it this way. Imagine an appetizer sampler platter.
Ooh.
All right? You know, it's covered with, like fried cheese sticks, hush puppies, what's the meat on the stick called?
Oh, chicken satay?
Yeah, chicken satay. All right. All variety of different foods. Now.
Something light and fluffy too, right?
Yeah, like, hush puppies are light and fluffy, right?
Not in the South.
Well, what's something light and fluffy that you get as an appetizer? Well, see, I think that's the thing. Most appetizers, they're so hideously unhealthy that you get them in small portions first, right?
Okay, so imagine something light and fluffy an appetizer.
Like the hush puppy.
Okay.
But so you have all these different items on the plate, right? And all of them have different densities, okay?
Okay.
Which means, and all of them have gravitational pulls, all right? And the more dense the appetizer item, the more gravitational pull it has. Okay?
Okay.
All right. Well, our planet is basically an appetizer platter when it comes to gravity. All right? There, our planet is covered with varying densities of rock. You have water that's cold. You have water that's hot. And, of course, there's different density there. You look under the Earth, they're going to be empty caverns. They're going to be, blocks of solid bedrock. There's going to be, liquid magma.
So gravity is going to vary according to where you are on the Earth.
Right.
That's interesting because I guess I just think of it as such a constant uniform thing.
Yeah. Yeah. We think of it more as, a pizza with a pizza's worth of uniform gravitational pull. But, like if you go up to Hudson Bay in Canada, the gravity is actually less there. And I need to stress that it's not less in the sense that, that you can go to Hudson Bay and feel like you lost weight.
You're not going to be able to fit in your skinny jeans or.
Right. The Earth's gravity is still pretty uniform, all across the globe, but it varies, to a slight degree, wherever you go. All right. So, most people would say, well, what does that matter? Right. It matters, when you start, looking into, fluid dynamics. All right. The ocean, for instance.
Okay.
It dictates, the flow of hot and cold water. All right. Think of it as a topography. Okay. Like if you have a hill next to a plain, water's going to flow down that hill. All right. Well, you have the same kind of topography going on across the planet, except in terms of gravity, with fluids drawn towards areas of higher gravity. Okay, so we're very interested in finding out exactly what this secret topography looks like. We've launched two orbiting spacecraft. There's the European Space Agency's Gravity Field and Steady State Ocean Circulation Explorer,
and this is up there right now.
Yes, called GOCE.
Okay.
That one went up in 2009. And then there's NASA's Gravity Recovery and Climate Experiment. That's called GRACE. And GRACE went up in 2002. All right. GOCE's mission has been to take a picture of what this the secret topography of gravity, which we call the geode, to take a picture of what that looks like.
At any moment in time.
Right, at any moment in time. Like, what are the highs? What are the lows? GRACE has been looking at how the geode changes, because it's always changing, too. It's not like you can, you know, you'll be able to go here and, oh, the gravity's always going to be this, especially when it comes to the ocean.
And why do we care if the geode changes?
Because the more we understand how the ocean transports heat and water, the more we understand how the ocean moves. And the more we understand how the ocean moves, the more we understand how the atmosphere moves. See, it's all a part of Earth's outer layer of fluid, all right? And that is where our weather takes place, and you know, everything from fierce hurricanes to patterns of drought and floods and what have you, all right? So it helps us get a better understanding of global climate. On a more specific note, scientists think that we'll be able to look at changes in gravity, changes in density, to determine shifts in water mass caused by droughts or floods.
Okay.
And it'll also allow us to better understand plate tectonics, seismic activity. You know, what's happening underneath the soil in the crust that leads to earthquakes and other phenomena. And just the geophysical processes that underlie the Earth. Sorry, but it's pretty. I'm getting a little long winded here, but it's pretty awesome, and that's why we're looking into it.
So I hope we've inspired some reverence for gravity in you. Besides the kind of gravity that trips you up and makes you fall flat on your face, and gravity is pretty cool. So now we would like to take a moment to imagine a world without gravity.
Oh, we were going to talk about it or just imagine it. Because I was just going to picture it. Yeah, one thing that's really going to suck is that all the atmosphere is going to drift off into space, and we're not going to be able to breathe.
Yeah.
Also, I don't think our hair is going to look right. I mean, how do you style your hair for that?
That's true. I mean, what kind of products could combat that effect?
Yeah.
I think that it would suck if the oceans boiled away and just kind of floated off into the void.
Yeah, that's bad too.
On a more mundane level, I think eating would kind of pose a number of challenges. So.
Yeah, only the astronauts. They'd be sitting there, happy as you please, eating their dinner out of their bags. Everybody else would just be in full freak-out mode.
Yeah, like trying to run after their hamburger, which had floated off into bun and
pickle.
The patties
over here, yeah.
And the chopped bits of onion, and I'm sorry.
The ketchup's just a globular thing floating out there.
Yeah, that would be bad. So that would be a world without gravity, and we hope that we may never encounter it. So if you want to tell us why you think gravity's cool or maybe not so cool, send us an email at sciencestuff@howstuffworks.com or go read about gravity over at the site.
Yeah, and while you're at it, check out the blogs where we handle any number of scientific subjects, including zombies from time to time.
Thanks for listening, guys.
For more on this and thousands of other topics, visit HowStuffWorks.com. Want more HowStuffWorks? Check out our blogs on the HowStuffWorks.com homepage.
Today's episode is brought to you by Visible. The future of wireless is here, and it's transparent. Switch to Visible, the wireless company that makes wireless visible. Get a one-line plan with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon, just $25 a month, every month, taxes and fees included. No hidden fees, no surprises, no, really.
What are you waiting for? Get with the times and switch to Visible at Visible.com. Monthly rate on the Visible plan for data management practices and additional terms, visit visible.com.
As important as choosing the right destination when traveling is choosing the right travel partner.
Gene! Gene Fodor!
Gene, was good!
But be careful, because the worst trips result when two partners have two different agendas.
The CIA really need your help, Gene.
Freeze, Americano!
Gene! Run!
Listen to Fodor's Guide to Espionage on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Something that makes me crazy is when people say, well, I had this career before, but it was a waste. And that's where the perspective shift comes, that it's not a waste, that everything you've done has built you to where you are now. This is She Pivots, the podcast where we explore the inspiring pivots women have made and dig deeper into the personal reasons behind them. Join me, Emily Tisch Sussman, every Wednesday on She Pivots. Listen to She Pivots on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Saleha Mohsen, and I've covered economic policy for years and reported on how it impacts people across the United States. In 2016, I saw how voters were leaning towards Trump and how so many Americans felt misunderstood by Washington. So I started The Big Take DC. We dig into how money, politics, and power shape government and the consequences for voters. With new episodes every Thursday, you can listen to The Big Take DC on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.